Chabad Danurg Audio.
This lecture is presented by Rabbi Lezer Gurkov, Rabbi at Congregation Beth Tfilah in London, Ontario.
Today we discuss the story of Rabbi Eliezer, known as Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, the great Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Eliezer the son of Hyrcanus. We've already encountered Rabbi Eliezer when we started our discussion of the sages of Yavne and talked about Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Eliezer was one of the great rabbis of Yavne. He was a student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was an incredible student who never forgot a single one of the teachings that he was taught. And ultimately, that was something he had to live with because he was unable to accept the ruling of the majority of the Sanhedrin whenever it contradicted the ruling that he had received from his own teacher, certain as he was that his memory was perfect and that the majority's rule of his day was contradicting the majority rule of the previous generation. So we know a little bit about Rabbi Eliezer, and we're now going to learn a little more about him. Rabbi Eliezer's father was Hyrcanus. Hyrcanus was a very wealthy man. He lived, according to the Talmud, more than a day's journey away from Yerushalayim. A very wealthy man who had many fields, and his sons helped him in his work. So his sons helped to plant the fields, to plow the fields, to sow the fields, to harvest the fields. Rabbi Eliezer was tall, he was strong, his father gave him work in one of the most difficult, hilly, rocky fields, and Rabbi Eliezer was constantly crying. Well, his father thought that he was unhappy with the workload, so he gave him work in an easier field, and Rabbi Eliezer continued to cry. Finally, his father asked him for the source of his tears, and Rabbi Eliezer explained, "I really don't like to work, I want to go and study Torah." His father said to him, "Eliezer, you're 28 years old. If you want to study, if you want to have Torah in your family, then get married, have children, and send them off to Torah study. But for you, you're 28 already." This seems to reflect the teaching of Elisha ben Avuya recorded in the tractate of Avot, the Ethics of Our Fathers. I think it's in the fourth chapter, where Elisha ben Avuya suggests that learning as a child is far more beneficial than learning as an adult. "You are an adult already," his father told him. Elisha would not accept this from his father, and his father finally was angered and said, "I won't give you any food till you finish planting the field I gave you to plant." Eliezer, according to one source, worked straight for 2 weeks until he finished planting the field and did not eat for 2 weeks straight. An incredible feat which demonstrates how powerful he was. This might be a slight exaggeration because the other sources in the Talmud don't actually provide this particular reference. The story is repeated in 3 or 4 different places. It's repeated in the book Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is attributed to Rabbi Eliezer himself in the first 2 chapters. The story appears in Avot de Rabbi Nassan, which is a work from Rabbi Natan, the colleague of Rabbi Meir, that lived 2 generations after Rabbi Eliezer, and it also appears in the Midrash. Rabbi Eliezer finally concluded his work, and his ox that he was using to plow the field died on him. He could no longer work any further, and so he sat down and cried some more. And Elijah appeared to him and said, "Why are you crying? If you want to study Torah, then go and study Torah." So Eliezer left. He went to the yeshiva. He traveled for more than a day, more than 24 hours. Over the course of this time, almost all of the various sources that tell the story agree that he didn't eat during the course of his journey. And he appeared in Yerushalayim before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We've already learned about Rabbi Yochanan in the session that discussed Rabbi Yochanan. He had this great big yeshiva in the square in front of the Temple Mount. And he would preach in the open, and thousands of people would come to listen. We don't know how many, but many, many people, including the greatest sages and the wealthiest nobility of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Eliezer appeared before Rabbi Yochanan and cried. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Why do you cry?" He said, "Because I want to study Torah." Rabbi Yochanan said, "If you don't know anything, sit down and I'll teach you." He taught him to pray the tefillah, he taught him to say the Shema, and he taught him to recite the Birchat HaMazon, the after blessing for food, for eating food. Rabbi Eliezer cried some more. He said, "What more do you want?" He said, "I want to learn more Torah." So Rabbi Akiva taught him 2 laws every day. And this went on for 8 days. Meanwhile, Rabbi Eliezer was staying at the home of Rabbi Yehoshua. This is when the two first met, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania and Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. And he had no food to eat. He was the son of a wealthy man, but he left his father's home, so he was eating whatever he can find. So the Midrash tells us he ate some clumps of earth, and he had foul breath, and Rabbi Yochanan couldn't stand it, and sent him off to a distance. Again, Rabbi Eliezer cried, and Rabbi Yochanan called him and said, "Why do you cry?" And he said, "Because you won't let me stand next to you, and I really want to study Torah." So Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "Just as you fouled the breath of your mouth for the sake of Torah, so should the breath of your Torah, so should the fragrance of your Torah study ascend to the heavens." Or according to another version, "Just as you fouled the breath of your mouth over the Torah, so should the fragrance of your Torah travel from one end of the world to another end of the world." Meanwhile, Rabbi Yochanan sent for his hosts. He asked Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yossi, "Is the man eating in your house?" And they said, "No, we thought he's eating by you. We thought he's eating by the rabbi." And so it turned out they discovered he didn't eat appropriately for 8 days. Rabbi Yochanan said, "We almost lost Eliezer between the two of us. He almost fell through between the two of us in the middle. Ibadnu es Eliezer mina emtza. We've lost Eliezer from between the two of us." So he said to Rabbi Eliezer, "From now on you'll eat at my table." And he said to him, "Who's your father?" And Rabbi Eliezer told him, "My father's Horkinus." Here, Rabbi Yochanan was so impressed. "You are the son of great men, and you've come here as a poor man. I know, I can see. Chayecha, I promise by your life, from here on out, you'll eat at my table." When word got out that Eliezer was learning with Rabbi Yochanan, Hyrcanus' other sons, Eliezer's brothers, began to encourage their father to go to Rabbi Yochanan and to dismiss Eliezer from the inheritance, to write Eliezer off, because he won't help with the work, and so why should he inherit the wealth when the time comes to inherit? So in the yeshiva, in the Yerushalayim, in the academy, they heard that Hyrcanus was coming. So Rabbi Yochanan said, make sure that everyone knows that no one should give Hyrcanus a place to seat. A place to sit. There should be only one seat for him in the front row, and that's the only place he'll be permitted to sit, so that he'll be front and center. So Hyrcanus came and he tried to sit down and no one allowed him to sit, so he had to move forward until he finally sat in the front row. And he was unaccustomed to sitting so close up to Rabbi Yochanan. He was sitting next to the three wealthiest men in Yerushalayim: Kalba Savua, Tzitzit HaKeset, and Akhtimon Ben Gurya. And when he sat there, he saw Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan saw Hyrcanus sitting there, but Rabbi Eliezer did not. Rabbi Yochanan called Rabbi Eliezer over and said, "Okay, this is your opportunity. I want you to give a sermon." Rabbi Eliezer said, "There's nothing I can say you haven't taught me. I am just like a cistern. I can only give off what was put into me." Rabbi Yochanan said, "No, you're like a river. You can take what was given to you, and then you can generate more water as you flow along, more Torah thoughts and ideas." Rabbi Yochanan said, "If you're ashamed to speak in front of me, I'll leave, and then you can speak." Rabbi Eliezer got up. He couldn't resist to refuse his teacher, and he started to expound upon words of the Torah that no ear has ever heard in the history of mankind. Rabbi Yochanan came back, kissed him on the head, and said, "That's incredible. Praiseworthy are Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that from their loins came such a special Eliezer." Rabbi Eliezer said, "But everything I learned came from you, my teacher." Hyrcanus stood up on his feet at that moment and said, "No, he should not have said, 'Praiseworthy is Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov,' but 'Praiseworthy am I that from my loins came such an incredible student.'" Rabbi Eliezer noticed his father and he said, "Father, how dare I stand and speak while you're there and standing? Why don't you sit down?" So his father said, "No, Eliezer, I came here so that I can write you off from my estate, but now I've determined that you should be a part of the estate and that all of the estate should go to you." But Rabbi Eliezer refused this generous offer and said, "I shouldn't have more than my brothers have." And that's how Rabbi Eliezer was accepted by his father Hyrcanus, and he became a prominent student in Rabbi Yochanan's yeshiva, Rabbi Yochanan's academy. A brief word about the three wealthy men of Yerushalayim next to whom Hyrcanus was sitting: Tzitzit HaKeset, Kalba Savua, and Akhtimon Ben Gurion. Why was he called Tzitzit HaKeset? Because his fringes, his tzitzit, were always dragging along kesed, pillows, or a carpet. Wherever he went, they'd roll out a carpet before him. So they called him tzitzit ha-kesed, the fringes of the carpet, of the pillow. And also because his fringes, meaning his garments, were always by the great men of Jerusalem and Rome. He was always a member of the social elite and of the academic elite. Why was he named Nakdimon ben Gurion? A very interesting story. Shenakta lochama ba'avuro. This man, Gurion's son, had a story where the sun was revealed and actually was brought back from its setting so that it can shine once again in the evening in the merit of Nakdimon. There was a story of the time of pilgrimage in Yerushalayim. It was one of the festivals to which all the Jews ascend to Yerushalayim, and there was a drought. There wasn't enough water for all the pilgrims. And so Nakdimon, a wealthy man, borrowed 12 cisterns from a Roman matron. And he promised to pay it back, not from a Roman matron, but from a Roman nobleman, a very wealthy Roman nobleman. And so if he wouldn't pay back the water, he would pay an exorbitant sum for it. On the day that it was necessary, on the day of payment, he ran into the nobleman who said to him, "It has been so clear for so many days, there hasn't been rain, you may as well pay me now." And Nakdimon said, "There are still many hours left to the day, maybe it'll rain." And the Roman laughed at him. Nakdimon put on his talit and he went to the Bet HaMikdash and he said, "Master of the universe, it is revealed and known before you that I didn't do this for my glory nor for my father's glory. I did this so that the pilgrims, the Jewish people, can have water to drink when they fulfill your mitzvah of coming to Yerushalayim." Immediately the clouds gathered and an incredible rainfall filled all the cisterns. So Nakdimon went out and he saw the cisterns were full even beyond the level that they were at when he took them, when he borrowed them. So he went to the Roman and he said, "Not only do I not owe you, but you owe me some rain, some water, some money for the extra water." The Roman said to him, "Look, I understand. I'm not going to ask you for the payment because I know it rained in your merit. But you have to recognize I don't owe you anything because the rain fell after the sun set." So Nakdimon went back into the Bet HaMikdash and he said there, "Ribono Shel Olam, can you please allow the sun to come forth?" And so indeed the sun did come forth even though it had already set. Nakta lo chama ba'avuro, on his merit the sun rose again. And so at that point the Roman paid Nakdimon for the additional, the excess water, and Nakdimon was known from henceforth as Nakdimon, the son of Gurion. Kalba Savua, which means a satisfied dog. Why was he called Kalba Savua? Because he was so generous that anyone who went into his house hungry like a dog would come out satisfied, because he always fed his guests. The Talmud tells us that he had so much gold that he can fill an incredibly large field with gold. A field in which one can plant 4 kor of wheat, and that's a very, very large amount, a very large field that he can fill with the gold from his storehouses. He had a daughter who had a bed that cost 12,000 golden dinar. And every Shabbos she would prepare a feast for which she would spend a full dinar to prepare. Over the course of time, incidentally, I should mention two of Eliezer ben Hyrcanus' brothers, at least two of them, joined him in the yeshiva and the academy and became his students. And they are Dosa ben Harkinas and Yehoshua ben Harkinas. Rabbi Yochanan praised Rabbi Eliezer as a cemented cistern. What is a cemented cistern? Just like a cemented cistern doesn't lose a drop of water, so too Rabbi Eliezer never forgets a single teaching. And in fact, Rabbi Eliezer, as we mentioned before, never offered a teaching he hadn't heard from his own rabbi. When he was asked a question that he didn't hear his rabbi tell him the answer to, he would say, "I don't know." In fact, often he would avoid the question. He was once asked, for example, "Does Shlomo, the son of David, have a share in the world to come? Does Solomon, the son of King David, have a share in the world to come?" And so rather than answering, he said, "I heard you ask me about his brother Avshalom, who was the great rebel who mounted a rebellion against David." Not that he didn't know the answer, it's just that he wouldn't say anything that his teacher hadn't already taught him. In fact, we are told at one point he was asked a number of questions, and he only answered some of them. And so they asked him, "Why didn't you answer the rest?" And he said, "I never heard the answers to the rest." So they said, are you telling us that you never say anything your teacher hadn't already taught you? And so he said, well, now you force me to say something my teacher didn't teach me. Now I'm going to say something to you about myself. And obviously my teacher didn't teach me that. What is it that he was going to tell them? He said, throughout the course of my life, since I've come to the academy to study Torah, I was always the first one in the door and the last one out the door. And while I was there in the academy, I always studied the Torah diligently. You never caught me napping. You never caught me having an idle chat. And Rashi points out, because he never had any form of idle chat, he therefore would have known everything Rabbi Yochanan had ever taught, because he had an incredible memory, a photographic memory. And if Rabbi Yochanan had taught something, he would have remembered it. And so, I never was distracted by sleep, nor was I ever distracted by idle chat. And so in this sense, Rabbi Eliezer emulated his own teacher, Rabbi Yochanan, of whom the Talmud says the very same flattery, the very same praise, that he was always first in and last out, and he was very diligent, and he never was caught napping, etc., etc. So, you see, Rabbi Eliezer emulated his teacher's Torah ethic. Yet at the very beginning of his time in the academy, he was already a good friend of Rabbi Yehoshua. The Midrash tells a story that one day there was a great rainstorm and the Sanhedrin couldn't convene in Rabbi Yochanan's academy in Yerushalayim. And so the children, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua were referred to as children. They happened to be in the academy, so they said, we'll convene. And they started to expound upon the letters of the alphabet and teach great deep teachings on these letters. And so the Talmud tells us that these two people who at that point were youngsters were noted as men of great promise. They were friends for a long time. In fact, they were invited together to the home of Avuya. When we discuss Reb Meir, we'll learn a little bit about a man by the name of Elisha ben Avuya, who grew up to be a great Torah scholar and later became a heretic. He turned against the Torah. Now, the Talmud tells us a little story about what happened when Elisha was first born. His father, Avuya, was one of the wealthy members of Yerushalayim, and he invited many esteemed guests to his home for the circumcision, for the Brit Milah, including Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, who came as a pair. And during the course of the festivities, some people began to sing in prose, and some people began to sing in verse. And so Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua said, they're doing their thing, we'll do our thing. And they started studying Torah. And during the course of their studies, a flame of fire descended from heaven and began to dance around under their chairs. And so Avuya, the father of the baby, was so impressed, and he said, if that's the case, if that's the way, if that's the result of Torah study, then I want to make sure that my son will become a Torah scholar. And so he enrolled his son in greatest academies, and the son became a Torah scholar. But because his father's incentive wasn't pure, his motive wasn't pure, therefore the Torah never stuck with Elisha. It never took, and Elisha turned against the Torah. The Talmud also tells us that Elisha's mother was once pregnant with him, and she passed by a house of a non-kosher home, and she smelled the non-kosher food, and she had a sudden urge, a craving, so they gave her non-kosher food, and it's from that food that he was nurtured yet in utero, so that too had a negative effect upon him. So the Talmud tells us a number of stories that happened to Elisha when he was yet still an infant, and even a fetus, and how that affected his mindset later when he confronted things that literally blew the mind of most people, the suffering, the incredible cruelty that some of the greatest devout members of the Jewish people had to experience, and how Elisha was unable to reconcile and resolve the doctrines of his faith and the realities of what he saw. The Talmud tells us his inability to resolve these two issues, faith and reason, came from influences that preceded his own cognizance. But I bring the story to you to demonstrate that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua were invited together to the Brit Milah, demonstrating that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua were a pair, they were a couple. You may recall when we talked about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai engaged in a form of subterfuge in order to make his way out of the besieged Yerushalayim and to confront Vespasian, who was the general that besieged Jerusalem, and with and negotiated with him the permission to establish an academy in Yavne. How did he exit Yerushalayim? What was the form of subterfuge? He announced, he allowed the word to get out that he had passed away. And two of his students carried him out. And this way no one would stand in the way of not allowing him out. Well, who were the two students? It was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, which demonstrates to us once again that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua were illustrious and well-known and respected members of Rabbi Yochanan's academy. A couple of personal details about Rabbi Eliezer. After his teacher, Rabbi Yochanan, passed away, Rabbi Eliezer established an academy and a Bet Din in Lud, and it had an incredible reputation. Our sages point to that academy as one example of great justice, and that Bet Din as an example of a place where great justice was practiced. If you're looking for justice, they said, follow Rabbi Eliezer to Lud. He was a man of great personal wealth. He inherited his share from his father's estate. And before he passed away, we will have opportunity to see that Rabbi Akiva testified that everything he touched always turned to gold, that his honey never went bad and his wine never went bad, etc., etc. He was a man of great personal wealth, and this combination of wealth and pedigree and scholarship enabled him, of course, to marry into the prestigious family, the royal family of the Jewish people at that time, which was the family of Hillel. As we pointed out, in the past, Rabbi Eliezer was married to Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Her name was Emma Shalom. And Emma Shalom is the great-granddaughter of Hillel. Rabbi Eliezer himself was called the Shamuti. What does Shamuti mean? Shamuti means, there are two meanings to the word Shamuti. One is a student of Shammai, and the other is one who was banned. Now clearly Rabbi Eliezer was not a student of Shammai. He was a student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a student of Hillel. Why was he called a Shamuti? Because his character was such that he was more prepared to accept, he was more disposed to accept the stringent, unbending view of Shammai than he was to accept the tolerant, conciliating view of Hillel. So despite the fact that he was a student of Hillel, there were times that he leaned more towards the position of Shammai. Another reason they called him Shamuti is because he was banned. And in Aramaic, the word cherem, or excommunication, is shamta. He was Shamuti, he was banned from the academy. If you hadn't had an opportunity to hear the story of his banishment, then I suggest that you listen to the discussion that we have about Rabbi Gamliel, where this story is presented. Rabbi Eliezer had very, very modest children. His children were very humble and modest. And Rabbi Eliezer, we are told that, and they were also very handsome children. And we are told the reason his children were so handsome is because he himself was so modest, and it was in the merit of his own modesty that he merited to have handsome and beautiful children. The banishment itself, which we described in detail how it came about when we discussed Rabbi Gamliel, was a lifelong affair. Rabbi Eliezer never conceded his position, and he never asked to be reinstated. This bothered him to no end, and at the same time, he never gave up hope. The Talmud tells a story that one day he was passing by under the window of a woman that was throwing her garbage over the deck out onto the ground, and it hit Rabbi Eliezer on the head. So Rabbi Eliezer said to himself, such an incredible shame, heaped upon the shame of banishment, to have the shame also of being disgraced in public with refuse on my head, maybe this has reached the limit and God will now turn things around so that I'll be reinstated in the academy. But of course, since he wasn't prepared to rescind his position, he therefore was never reinstated. It was a false hope, but he never gave up a false hope. We've already pointed out that Rabbi Eliezer was not the only person in such a predicament. Akavya ben Mahalalel, who was also one of the great rabbis of his day, also refused to accept the rule of the Sanhedrin because he had a tradition from his teachers that contradicted this rule. And the rabbis didn't want to ban him, but they had no choice. They banned him. Before they banned him, they offered him a deal. They said, if you change your position, we will offer you the role as Av Bet Din. You'll be the Supreme Justice. And Akavya refused and said, I'll never have people say that I bent and changed and adjusted my position for a personal bribe so that I can be given an honorable role. Rabbi Eliezer kept abreast of rabbinic developments and academic developments in the yeshiva in Yavne. He lived in Lod, in Lod. That was a city not far from Yavne. And from time to time, students would come and tell him, well, what was going on in Yavne. The Talmud tells us in the Tractate of Chagiga that one time Rabbi Yossi ben Drumaskis came to visit Rabbi Eliezer in Yavne. Came to visit Rabbi Eliezer from Yavne to Lod. So Rabbi Eliezer asked him, what is the innovation today that was brought up in the academy in Yavne? What innovation? What new innovative Torah thought? And so he said, they debated and analyzed very carefully the question of whether we are required to tithe from produce that was grown in the lands that formerly belonged to Ammon and to Moab, which was on the east bank of the Jordan River. And it was determined that yes, we should tithe from those areas as well. So Rabbi Eliezer cried and he said, "So dadushem li yireyav." This is a quote from the Tehillim. The secrets of God are made known to those who fear Him. I can tell you that you should not be concerned with whether your majority vote passed by a slim margin or a wide margin, because I have a tradition from my teacher. I remember, again, Rabbi Eliezer's famous memory, his formidable memory. I remember Rabbi Yochanan said that we must tithe from the produce that grows in those lands. But because Rabbi Eliezer was also a very firm and sharp mind, Rabbi Eliezer said, how dare you place a crown upon the person who called this law an innovation? It's an old law known forever. And he punished the messenger in his zeal, in his fire, in his burning, pious anger on behalf of God. He said to the messenger, to Rabbi Yossi, he said, put out your hands and offer your eyes. And at that moment, Rabbi Yossi went blind. But after Rabbi Eliezer calmed down, Rabbi Eliezer prayed, he realized that he had overreacted. It wasn't Rabbi Yossi's fault that the others weren't granted a memory as formidable as his own, as Rabbi Eliezer's own. So Rabbi Eliezer then said, Yehi Ratzon, may it be the will of God that Yossi ben Drumaskis have his vision restored. And indeed, at that time, Rabbi Yossi's vision was restored. So it's an incredible story that is told to us in the Talmud, but it demonstrates that Rabbi Eliezer made an effort to stay abreast, to keep abreast of the developments in Yavne. Rabbi Eliezer, the effect of the banishment upon Rabbi Eliezer was visible in many ways. We saw before that when he was informed of the banishment, he and the messenger who informed him, that was Rabbi Akiva, sat together and cried bitter tears. And Rabbi Eliezer continued to preach the importance of maintaining good relationships with one's colleagues, that one has to cherish the honor and the respect of one's colleagues as much as one cherishes one's own honor and respect. And Rabbi Eliezer would teach, beware of the sages, because you cannot live without them. He would always say, you should always warm yourself against the fire and the flame of the wise men of Torah, and be very careful with their coal to ensure that it's never extinguished. Because their bite is the bite of a fox, and their poison is the poison of a scorpion. And all of their words are like flaming coals of fire. Rabbi Eliezer said, never be quick to anger. He understood some of what had drawn him into his predicament, even though he felt himself a victim of circumstance, because he could not rescind his position. He was bound by his own memory of his rabbi's teachings. But he still counseled others to be a little bit more careful. Rabbi Eliezer was very strong on prayer. He always said, never pray by rote. If your prayer becomes familiar to you, then you have to stop praying. Prayer has to be an important moment between you and God. It must be an encounter that leaves a great impression upon you. Rabbi Eliezer came to a synagogue at one point, and there were 9 Jews, and he was looking for a 10th, and he didn't have one. So he freed his slave. We mentioned before when we discussed Rabbi Gamliel, there's a Torah prohibition against freeing a non-Jewish slave. But here Rabbi Eliezer found that his mitzvah to pray together with a minyan overruled the prohibition against freeing the slave. So he freed his slave in order for the slave to become part of the minyan. The halakha is, when a non-Jewish slave in a Jewish home is liberated, then he automatically assumes the status of a Jew. And so Rabbi Eliezer was prepared to let go of his slave in order to fulfill the mitzvah one time of praying with a minyan. Because, of course, once the slave was freed, he could not be indentured again to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was a fierce opponent of the idea of prescribing specific times for prayer, but nevertheless, his view was overruled and Rabbi Gamliel permitted it. In this case, Rabbi Eliezer didn't put up a stiff resistance. He was prepared to accept it against his own view because this wasn't something that he necessarily felt that he had to take a stand on. Perhaps his teacher didn't take a stand on it either. Rabbi Eliezer taught that one should be very careful to put on the tefillin every day. Because it says in the Torah that when the nations of the world will see that the name of God is prescribed upon you, then they will fear you. Comes Rabbi Eliezer, the great one, and says, here we're talking about tefillin in the head. It's interesting to note that he said tefillin in the head, not tefillin on the head. There was a story that occurred to the founder of the Chabad Chassidus, that's the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. He was once arrested because of a libel that was brought before the Tsar of Russia. And so when they came to arrest him, he was wearing his tefillin. And when they saw him, the inspectors who came to arrest him receded and shrank away in fear. And later, before he took off his tefillin, he had opportunity to speak to his brother-in-law, who asked him, why did the inspector shrink away in fear? So the rabbi said, because they saw my tefillin. And Rabbi Eliezer says, when they see the tefillin in the head, they fear you. So the brother-in-law asked, but I have tefillin on many a time when a non-Jew saw me and didn't shrink away. So the rabbi explained, you wear your tefillin on the head. Rabbi Eliezer was speaking of people who wear tefillin in the head. Another point to be made about the tefillin and the resulting fear that the nations will have is in 1967, when the Jewish world was worried that Israel would go under the incredible threat of three countries attempting to attack Israel all at once. The Lubavitcher Rebbe predicted that there would be an incredible victory for the Jewish people, which in fact happened to come true. But he then explained that because tefillin brings about a fear of the nations of the world for the Jewish people, that we should embark on a campaign to put on tefillin with as many Jewish people as we can. And so indeed, the Hasidim of Chabad went out, spread out all over not only Israel, but the world at large to put on tefillin, in which merit they predicted a great miraculous victory. And of course the victory occurred, and those who are familiar with the story of the Six-Day War know that in many occasions, in many instances, when the enemy was in a position to take advantage of a particular opportunity, a particular moment of weakness on the part of the Tzahal, of the Israeli Defense Forces, rather than pressing their advantage, the enemy simply abandoned their camps and ran. This happened on the Golan, this happened in the desert, this happened on a number of occasions, which can only be interpreted as the fear that the nations felt that the Jews are coming. Why? Because the Yaru Mimecha, they will fear you. Rabbi Eliezer said, this refers to the tefillin on the head. Rabbi Eliezer was a great proponent of Kibud Av V'Em, honoring the mother and father, honoring our parents. Rabbi Eliezer spoke very highly also of honoring teachers. Rabbi Eliezer said that everything I said, I heard from my teacher, and what I heard from my teacher, I could never change my mind on that. I could never rescind that position. They once asked Rabbi Eliezer, how great is the mitzvah of honoring one's parents? How far does it extend? So Rabbi Eliezer replied by telling the story of Dama, the son of Netina. Dama was not a Jewish man, but he had a gem in his collection. He was a diamond merchant that the sages required for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. And they were prepared to pay a great deal of money to buy it. But the key to his box of gems was under his father's pillow, and his father was napping. So he said, he refused, I don't want to sell the gem right now. So they thought he wanted a higher sum, so they offered a higher sum, and he continued to refuse. Until they offered the highest sum they could afford, and when he refused, they left. This, said Rabbi Eliezer, is the extent that the Torah requires from us in honoring our parents. That's an incredible sacrifice. As a postscript to the story, the same Dhamma was granted by God a rare red calf in his herd. Now, Jews need red calves. We all know that it's through the red heifer that we can provide the process of purification for those who have become ritually impure. It's called para aduma, a red heifer. And so the sages returned to Dhamma to purchase this red calf. And Dhamma said, I will take from you only the sum that you offered for the initial, for the diamond. So the sages thought he was talking about the last offer they made. And Dhamma said, no, I will not profit on my honoring of my father. I will accept only the first offer that you made. And then the following offers that you made, thinking that I was holding them back for a better price, well, that I will leave with you, because that I only received as a result of my mitzvah of honoring my father. This, said Rabbi Eliezer, is how a non-Jew honors a father. Can you expect how a Jew who has a mitzvah obligation to honor a father should really honor the father? Rabbi Eliezer was very well versed in the laws of Tahara and Tuma, purity and impurity. We will see when we discuss his passing how he actually testified that he knows much about these laws. So well was he versed in these laws that one day when Moshe Rabbeinu climbed Mount Sinai, the Talmud tells us a tradition of what happened. Moshe must have shared this with the people in his generation who transmitted it to the next generation, and it was finally recorded in the days of the Talmud. Moshe saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed is He, the Almighty God, sitting and learning, studying the laws of purity and impurity. And as he studied, he said, Eliezer Omer, Eliezer says the following law. So Moshe says to God, the whole of the world belongs to you, the upper worlds and the lower worlds, and you have to quote from Eliezer. So God said, listen, Moshe. You will see one day there will be a very righteous man who will be born into my world, and he will begin to learn and to study and to derive from the laws of the red heifer words that were never heard by a human ear. And some commentators suggest that perhaps this was the teaching that Rabbi Eliezer offered in front of his father Hyrcanus. But that seems to be denied by some of the sources that actually share the teachings that Rabbi Eliezer offered on that day, and it had nothing to do with the laws of the red heifer. Nevertheless, when Moshe Rabbeinu heard God say this, he said, "Master of the universe, may it be your will that this man come from my loins, being from my family." So God said, "I swear by your life that he will be from your loins." And the Midrash concludes by saying, this is the meaning of the verse, that one of Moshe's two kids, his name was Eliezer. So the commentators understand that either it was a reincarnated soul from Moshe's son into Rabbi Eliezer, Hyrcanus' son, or that in fact Rabbi Eliezer was a descendant from Moshe's family. But it's difficult to say that, because that would make Eliezer a Levi. And unless Rabbi Eliezer's mother was the descendant of Moshe's, and this would make Rabbi Eliezer not necessarily render Rabbi Eliezer a Levi. So an incredible story of how he was quoted by God, and how Moshe wished that he be a descendant of his own family. Rabbi Eliezer was once accused of heresy. I mentioned on a number of occasions that during this period of time, the Hebrew Christians began to develop a following among the Jewish people. And at this point in time, Rome was persecuting the Hebrew Christians even more than they persecuted the Jews. Rabbi Beryl Wine suggests it's possible that the Roman hatred of the Christians was even greater than that of their hatred for the Jews, because the Christians were, by their nature, more outgoing and looking to convert people to their religion. They were missionary by nature, always looking to convert people to Christianity. They were proselytizers. And so Rome persecuted the Christians even more than they persecuted the Jews. In fact, at that time, the Christians were the Jews, because many Jews were the early Christians. And so Rabbi Eliezer was accused of worshiping in a Christian church. And of course, it had never happened. But he was accused of this, and so he was brought before the Roman court. And so the Roman judge said to Rabbi Eliezer, an old man like you, such a wise man, should engage in such folly, such foolish beliefs. So Rabbi Eliezer said, the judge is trustworthy to me. Rabbi Eliezer meant the judge in heaven. Whatever happens to me, I accept it willingly and lovingly. But the Roman judge thought he was talking about him, so he was flattered, and he said, "Ah, if I'm trustworthy to you, then I swear by my God," and then he invoked the name of his God, of his idol, "that you will go free." So one idolater is prosecuting another idolater. The bottom line is, Rebbe Eliezer was shattered. He returned home and his students came to comfort him, but he wouldn't accept comfort. "How could such a thing have happened to me? How could I have been accused of heresy? What did I do wrong?" So Rebbe Akiva asked permission to speak, and Eliezer said, "Speak." So Rabbi Akiva said, "Rabbeinu, my teacher, maybe at one point you received some kind of pleasure from a Christian, and that's what brought you to this situation. Maybe God was punishing you for allowing yourself to receive pleasure from a Christian." So Rabbi Eliezer said, "Akiva, you reminded me. One day I was walking in the upper market of Tzipori, and there I met a Hebrew Christian who tried to teach me a particular teaching from Torah, and I enjoyed it, and I didn't say anything. And I violated the teaching of our sages that say that we have to distance ourselves as far as possible from anything that is even slightly related to heresy. And this teaching is based on a verse from the Torah. So because I violated that teaching, that transgression brought me to be punished, that I should be publicly humiliated in the manner that I should be accused of heresy." That's a very interesting story. We now get to the end of Rebbe Eliezer's life, where he fell into his final illness and he was on his deathbed. And the rabbis came to visit him. Keep in mind, it had been years since they had last seen him because he was excommunicated, he was banned, he was not in the yeshiva anymore. And so, for the purpose of visiting him before he passed away, they made an exception and they came. But they sat in the other room, they didn't walk in. And so at that point, Rabbi Eliezer's son, who he named after his father — his son was Hyrcanus — Hyrcanus came out of his father's room, and his father was screaming at him. And so what had happened? Hyrcanus went in, it was Friday afternoon, almost Shabbos, and so Hyrcanus tried to help his father take off the tefillin. And his father started shouting at him. So Hyrcanus came out, and he saw the rabbis who came to visit, so he said, "I don't know if my father is sane." So his father screamed from the bedroom, "Of course I'm sane! It is he and his mother who are insane! What does he mean, coming to help me with my tefillin before Shabbos comes? And he's not worried about the biblical prohibitions about putting out all the fires in the home, etc. Taking off tefillin before Shabbos is a rabbinical requirement, not a biblical requirement. That should come second." So the rabbi saw that he was very sane. So they came into the room and they sat at a distance of 4 amos, of 4 cubic feet. So he said to them, "Where have you been till now?" Well, he knew very well they weren't there because of the ban, but neither he nor they would actually acknowledge it. There was no reason to. So they told him, "We didn't have time to come earlier." So he said at that point, he engaged in a prophetic vision where he said, "I wonder if these people will die a natural death." And so, indeed, several years after Rebbe Eliezer's death, came the revolt of Bar Kokhba, which was later crushed by Rome, and the incredible harsh measures that Rome instituted after crushing the revolt of Bar Kokhba resulted in the gruesome execution of many of Rebbe Eliezer's colleagues and the rabbis of that day. Rabbi Akiva was executed in a particularly gruesome way, so Rabbi Akiva at that moment said to Rebbe Eliezer, "What is my fate?" Rebbe Eliezer said, "Your fate is worse than their fate." When the rabbi saw how badly Rebbe Eliezer was suffering, they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva began to laugh. They said to Rabbi Akiva, "Why do you laugh?" He said, "Why do you cry?" So they said, "How could we not cry? We see our Rebbe suffering like this." And he said, "How can I not laugh when I see him suffering like this? All my life, I was always concerned that my Rebbe is being rewarded for all of his good deeds here in this world, because not a thing went wrong in his life. Everything was good. We mentioned before that his children were very beautiful and handsome. He was a very wealthy man. He was married into a wonderful, prestigious family. And as Rabbi Akiva said, his wine never went sour, and his honey never went bad, and his oil never went bad, and his linen never goes bad. Maybe our teacher is receiving all his reward in this world. And for his sins, he'll be punished in the world to come." So Rabbi Eliezer took offense and said, "Akiva, do you suspect me of sin?" So Rabbi Akiva turned to Rabbi Eliezer and said, "Rabbi, you taught us that there is a verse from Shlomo HaMelech, from King Solomon, that there is no man in the world who is righteous to the extent that he could not possibly sin." At that point, the rabbis began to engage in polemics, and they started, sorry, not polemics, but poetic praises of Rabbi Eliezer. So one of them got up and he said, Rabbi Tarfon got up and said, Rabbi Eliezer, you're better for the Jewish people than a drop of rain. Because the rain helps to nurture people in this world, but your Torah nurtures us in this world and in the world to come. So Rabbi Yeshua said, I can outdo my colleague and I can say you're better even than the sun, because the sun is good for people in this world, but your Torah preserves us in this world and in the world to come. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, you're better to the world than a mother and a father, because the mother and father bring a person into this world, but your Torah ushers us into this world and the world to come. And Rabbi Akiva broke with his colleagues and he said, Chavivin Yisurin, suffering is something we should cherish. So Rabbi Eliezer said, be silent for a moment, bring Akiva close so I can hear his words. Akiva, my student, how do you know that we should cherish suffering? So Rabbi Akiva said, I have inferred it from a particular verse where the Torah describes that Menashe, the king of Judea, who was a very wicked man, suffered because he fell ill, and it was that suffering that turned his heart back to God, and for the last 22 years of his life, he had repented, he was a penitent and a very devout Jew. Well, at that point, Rabbi Eliezer spread his two arms wide, and he then put them on his heart, and he said, oh, my poor arms, you are like two unrolled Torah scrolls. I learnt a lot of Torah, and I taught a lot of Torah. But I want you to know, I didn't displace any of my teacher's information, my teacher's Torah, any more than a dog that laps at the ocean. All the Torah I have is not in comparison to the Torah my teachers have, and as much water as there is in the mouth of a dog who laps water from the ocean compared to the water that's in the ocean. And I want to tell you that my students took less from me than I took from my teachers. And if you recall, his teacher was Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan said the same thing about Hillel. So throughout the generations, each generation recognized that their forebears were greater than them. Then Rabbi Eliezer went on to testify, I can say 300 laws in the section of purity and impurity, and nobody can ask me a question that I can't answer. I am the respected expert in this area. This is almost like, what a shame that you weren't here to take advantage of my knowledge, and now I'm about to go, and it's going to be too late. All this knowledge will go to the grave with me. And all these years that I've been banned, and I know that you couldn't help it, and neither could I, but it's such a shame for the sake of the Torah that wasn't utilized properly. And then he went on to say that he was an incredible expert in many other laws. So finally, the students began to ask him questions quickly before he passed away to get as much information as they could from him. So they went through a whole series of questions that related to disputes that Rabbi Eliezer had had with his colleagues in the past. And on each of them, Rabbi Eliezer retained his position. He was intransient and intractable. He was faithful to his teachers until the end. And he kept on saying to each of the questions that he had been asked, he said, this is pure, this is impure, exactly as he had taught it many years before he was banned. And so at the last question he was asked, the answer was Tahor, pure. So he answered the question, he said Tahor, and with that he passed away. As the Talmud says in its own inimitable poetic way, his soul left him in purity, because it left as he said the word Tahor, pure. Immediately Rabbi Yehoshua, who you recall was his great friend and his colleague in the past, but he was the one who instituted the excommunication and the banishment. Rabbi Yeshua demonstrated his own love for his colleague and the pain he felt for what he needed to do for the sake of the Jewish people and for the sake of the future in preserving the unity and the authority of the Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet and he said, Hutar ha-neder, the ban has been lifted, the ban has been lifted. And now the students got up and cried together. This happened just before Shabbos, and so the funeral occurred on Saturday night. And it seems that he passed away in a city called Caesarea, though he generally lived in Lud. Maybe he was visiting with his Hyrcanus, with his son, in Caesarea. So they carried him in the funeral procession from Caesarea to Lud on Saturday night. Rabbi Yehoshua ran into Rabbi Akiva during the funeral, and he saw Rabbi Akiva was inflicting wounds upon his body. He was just scratching and cutting himself in his intense grief. And his blood was flowing down onto the ground, and Rabbi Akiva was crying and calling, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael Uparashav, one of the greatest compliments one can pay to the departed in a eulogy. And he said, I have so many coins, but I have no banker to exchange them. In other words, I have so many questions, but the rabbi who was the deposit of so much knowledge, the holder of so much knowledge, has now departed the world, and I haven't had opportunity to plumb the depths of his knowledge to the extent that I would have liked to. And what a shame, what a loss for the Jewish people. Even Rabbi Yehoshua eulogized him and said, the stone upon which Rabbi Eliezer sat is like Har Sinai, is like Mount Sinai. And the man who sat on that stone is comparable to the Aaron HaBrit, to the Ark of the Covenant. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they entered the academy after Rabbi Eliezer passed away, and some issues came up that Rabbi Eliezer disagreed upon. And so they wanted to overturn Rabbi Eliezer's position. And here Rabbi Yeshua stepped in and he said, we don't refute, we don't turn back the lion after he passed away. He's not here to defend himself. We will not offend, we will not touch his position on this area of halacha. The very Rabbi Yehoshua, who overruled Rabbi Eliezer in his lifetime, refused to allow such indignity after his passing. It is interesting to note that Rabbi Yehoshua himself, after Rabbi Gamliel passed away, was looking to overrule one of Rabbi Gamliel's laws. And at that point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said to Rabbi Yehoshua, it's too late, we will not allow for Rabbi Gamliel's position to be overturned after his passing. He said at that point, Gufa batar resha azil, the famous line, that the body must follow the head. If we didn't overturn this law during his time of during the time he was alive, when the head was here, then now that he's not here, the body must follow the way the head of the yeshiva established the law. If he passed away with this law, then this has to be the law that we live with. Well, this brings us to the end of our discussion of Rabbi Eliezer. It's a discussion and a description of at once a powerful man, a formidable scholar of Torah, a very strong and firm-minded individual, a person with great passion, with a fiery flame in his soul for God and for the love of Torah, and at the same time, a man who recognized that he too had to pay the ultimate price for the goal that everyone wanted to achieve together, which is the goal of establishing the unity and the sole authority of the Sanhedrin. His price was to live out his days in solitude, and the price that the sages paid was to deprive themselves of the Torah knowledge that Rabbi Eliezer carried with him from the great teachers of the former generation.